Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already today, thank you for that. We appreciate it very much. My website is www.jbsba.com. That's the short one. Or smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's the long one. If you like to type, you got one there. And if you don't, there's another one for you, too. And both of them, though, get you to the same place where you can find not only our regular website, but you can also find our blog, which is pretty new, and I hope you'll check that out. And don't forget to subscribe to our free newsletter. Dr. William Dunkelberg is our guest. Bill is a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's chief economist with the National Federation of Independent Business. He's a professor at Temple University, having been the dean of the whole operation over there, the whole business school over there for a while until he decided to take it a little bit easier. And he's our good friend. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Jim. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. It's good to have you back, as always. And folks, as I mentioned earlier in the hour, every month for the last 133 years. Is that right, Bill? 133? Is it just 33?
Somewhere around in there.
Something under a couple of hundred years. Bill has literally, folks, though, it has been decades, and Bill has been polling small business owners all across the country and assembling their thoughts, their current ideas on how the economy is going, and he does that every month and reports it to a lot of people, including us, and we feel very fortunate to have this report available to us. Not only, by the way, do we do it on the show with Bill, but we also post it. He allows us to post it on our website if you want to go see what they say in writing. And Bill, what are your respondents telling you this month?
Well, the story is a pretty good story. It's that things haven't changed very much. The economy is very solid. Mathematically looking at our numbers, we were a little more optimistic than we were before, but basically, not a whole lot of change. A little more strengthening in the labor markets, and of course, we got, as expected from our survey, the government finally admitted that there were a lot of new jobs created, so that number looked good. We were over 200,000, as you recall.
Mm-hmm. 2.4 million in the last 24 months.
Yeah, it's been a good run.
It's pretty sporty, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a good run. Now, there are people who will claim that the economy is underperforming. It could have been better than that. And they'll go back and look at the 2000 numbers, which, of course, was an insane period when we did employ 64.5% of the eligible population.
We were overemployed.
My article about that just appeared in the July issue of Business Economics.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And basically, we estimated there that we had 2.5 million more people working in 2000 than we needed to make the output that year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because everybody, including our small business owners, had tried to hire people on the presumption, unfortunately false, that the economy would keep soaring with this internet thing, and it didn't do that, of course. We fell off the cliff in the second half of 2000. Everybody said, oops, we have too many people.
Well, and the thing is we were going down, the wrong way down a one-way street heading toward that cliff, and
yeah.
there was nothing else that could happen. In fact, Bill, I think we're fortunate to have recovered from that period of irrational exuberance and extraordinary popular delusions and madness of crowds. I think we're fortunate to have recovered from all that as well as we have.
Yeah, not much happened. First of all, we had we have to really work to declare that 2001 period a recession, and only lasted 9 months. It was certainly the mildest in history. And a lot of people give credit to the outgoing Mr. Greenspan, who deftly changed monetary policy in response to the bursting of the bubble and cushioned the fall. Now there's worry that he might have set up another run the other way.
He does. Bill, I've been thinking about him and these bubbles things. I keep thinking about the movie The Jerk with Steve Martin. Remember that? Do you ever see that movie?
Well,
he was working in a gas station, and there were cans of oil stacked up by the pumps, and the sniper was shooting at him, and he kept missing Martin and hitting the cans of oil, and they were, you know, was oil was going everywhere. And he turned around and he said, he's mad at these cans. and so I've decided that Mr. Greenspan is mad at these bubbles.
Yeah, well, you know, he understands that if you, you know, the farther they go, the, you know, the bigger the burst, and the burst can create some major problems.
But Bill, some of my other experts say that it's not Mr. Greenspan's job to be tilting at bubbles.
Yeah, well,
and when we come back after these messages, I'd like your thoughts on that, because I do think that's an important point. We're seeing a pattern here, folks, and of course it won't last long, because as Mr. Dunkelberg said, Mr. Greenspan will be heading off to other endeavors in about 4 or 5 months. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
People say that I found a way to make you say.
Richie Valens, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Dr. William Dunkelberg is our guest. Bill is the chief economist with the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business, and a professor at Temple University. Bill, when we went to the break, we were talking about bubbles, and I was accusing Mr. Greenspan, Chairman Greenspan, of tilting at bubbles and not liking these bubbles. And it seems that he went after the stock market bubble, and he caused it to come down, and we've lived through it. Although a lot of capital was lost during that time, and now we have a real estate bubble, and he's apparently tilting at the 5 or 6 real estate bubbles around the country. Most of the country is not experiencing a bubble. Bill, why is he doing this?
That's right. Well, I'm not sure that he really is. The only thing that the Fed's doing, of course, is raising the federal funds rate and trying to restore it to a situation in which the real interest rate is positive, meaning that the nominal federal funds rate, which is now 3.5, has to be above the inflation rate. And of course, forgetting about the tax issue, that the interest is tax deductible, so it's the real after tax rate.
But isn't he trying to?
He's not there yet. So
isn't he trying to influence long term rates, though? Isn't he concerned about long term rates and how it's creating the potential for a bubble?
Well, he's always concerned about long term rates, but usually it's the reverse. The concern about long term rates is that if you let inflation get out of control, then you get high long term rates. And so the goal of the Fed is to make sure inflation doesn't get out of control so that you don't get high long-term rates, because high long-term rates are not as good for economic growth as lower ones.
How many more raises do you think we're going to have? He's going to meet, he'll be the chairman, for 3 more meetings?
Yeah, I think 3.
About 3 more meetings.
Right.
So will they raise rates all 3 times?
That's my bet.
And any more than a quarter point each?
Never, never. Because if he moves anything other than this nice, well-established pattern, you know, which is where he told, you know, from the transparency perspective, everybody was told what they were going to do and how they were going to do it.
Yeah.
If he did a no raise or a 50 basis point raise, immediately everybody said, "Oh, what does the Fed see that we don't see? What's the problem?"
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you wanted 50 basis points, you know, you just have to wait 8 weeks and do it, you know, in 2 quarter-point moves. You don't have to, you don't have to do anything special to disturb the markets, which the Fed does not like to do. The Fed likes to be as unobtrusive as possible in conducting its policy.
Bill, if I'm going to put you on the spot, and then we're going to get back to the survey. Assuming for a moment that it's not you, you're not the next chairman of the Fed, which folks, I don't have my tongue in my cheek here, folks. I'm assuming it's not you, Bill. Who would be the next likely candidate in your opinion?
In my opinion, the field is not real clear, and could be Marty Feldstein, could be Glenn Hubbard,
Bernanke.
And Ben Bernanke, of course, is who everyone thinks is being groomed in a way for it, being tested, because he barely started his term on the Federal Reserve before he left it to become chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. Now, I don't know,
right,
unless you enjoy being tortured, that's not a job you go get compared to the Fed job.
Right.
if ever, and there's no real policy, you know, function at the CEA. It's strictly advisory, and it's strictly, you know, kind of justifying the president's plan. Whereas if you're at the Fed, you have a very important regulatory role that affects the long-term health of the economy.
Who are those three? Would you prefer?
Oh gosh,
who do you think would do the best job?
Well, the only problem with Bernanke and Hubbard is that they're like me. They're just inexperienced academics. I mean, ask yourself, look at Ben's resume. He's a great scholar, great thinker, very impressive mind. I really am awed by his thinking, and he's a very logical, careful person. But, you know, has he, you know, what experience has he got in capital markets? And the answer is...
What did Mr. Greenspan have that?
Well, he had a lot of pragmatic experience because he was, back in those days, he was, of course, a business consultant.
And,
you know, so he had a lot of kind of more real-world experience, whereas, you know, Bernanke and Hubbard and I and other people like that, academics, we're writing articles and things, which are great, and it's good to have good, solid heads, you know.
So that leaves Feldstein.
Yeah, he's not got a lot more, but at least he's been around for a while. So none of those people are really, but Marty would be closer in terms of having experience. So that's why, as we name these people, and those are the people on almost everybody's list just for fun.
What about Bob McTeer?
Yeah, well, possible.
Long shot.
Yeah, I think that's a long shot.
Yeah. Former president of the Dallas Fed, now president, chancellor, I guess, of the Texas A&M.
Right. The Texas A&M is well connected to the White House. Though. Some people say that move from the Dallas Fed to A&M was just prepping him to get the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Bush may well pick somebody that, you know, is not on our list.
Right. Well, we shall see. The interesting news is in about 6 months we'll know, won't we? Maybe less.
Yeah, you'll know. You'll start getting clues pretty soon because they'll start filling their, you know, including Greenspan's position, there are three positions to fill.
Right. That's the vice chairman.
You got Bernanke's position is unfilled, and Gramlich has resigned this month, retired this month, and then, of course, Greenspan himself. So there are three openings filled.
And I predict that that somebody that we know very well may have a chance at one of those.
Well, that's probably true.
And we'll see how that works out. We'll be anxious to see how that works, Bill.
That's stand by. Quick, we know everybody.
I'm talking about people that I know. I don't know all those people. I only know a couple of those people. Stand by. We'll be right back. 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Bill Dunkelberg is our guest, Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the National Federation of Independent Business. That's NFIB.com, right, Bill?
That's it.
That's where they can find your survey as well as on my homepage. And, Bill, also you have another website too, don't you?
I do have another website, and you can get there at smallbizbus.org or drdunk.org.
Drdunk.org. I didn't know about that one, Bill. That's a good one. And also smallbiz.org?
Right, B-U-S.
B-U-S.
B-U-S. Small B-U-S.
Right, dot org. Bill, getting back to the survey, it looks like for third quarter, there really isn't any bad news in the third quarter information, is there?
Doesn't look like it. You know, everything is looking pretty solid. The profitability numbers are getting better again. The sales numbers are strong. The hiring numbers are strong. The capital spending plans were surprisingly down a few points, but you know they vary a couple points from sampling error from month to month. So
that's got to be taking a hit from gas and interest rates, Bill.
Might be a little bit. Again, you know, for most people, remember this is the small business sector is a service dominated. Sector. So, you know, so yeah, it costs you more to drive to work, but it doesn't cost you much more to do your work. So unless you have a delivery truck or you're in, you know, a transportation business, driving a cab or doing, you know, that kind of thing, you know, it hasn't been quite so bad.
Well, you know, Bill, I have a friend who's in the wholesale business, and I was asking him how the gas prices were affecting him, and he said not so much because he had long ago, very intelligently, built in automatic increases to his customers when gasoline prices went up.
Well, that was good. Well, I had dinner with a restaurant owner friend last night, and he was complaining about it, and he said, you know, he gets 50 deliveries, you know, a month or whatever, and each one's charging him an extra $5. Well, I'm sure that's the case, but that's not a whole lot of money.
Right.
You know, overall, but
the problem he's got is he's got to go reprint his menus to raise his prices 25 cents a piece.
That's what this guy said. He said, you know, I can't change my menus. You know, that's what we call in the textbooks the menu cost of inflation. Now, once everybody has an electronic menu, we'll be able to do it, and we'll get there one of these days. But the problem right now with the energy costs, they've been high long enough so that, in a sense, you know, the cost of gasoline is showing up twice now in the CPI. Once as the cost of gasoline, and once as it's being kind of fed through everybody else's prices.
Right.
They're all marking it up. So, you know, and that's what the Fed worries about, is that the inflation gets embedded in the economy. And, you know, you can drive energy prices back down, but then, you know, how long will it take then to squeeze the energy cost out of the food cost?
Very slowly, because we're going to try to reap the benefits of those profits when
Absolutely.
We can. Bill, most of my experts are saying that we need to be looking at this kind of petroleum pricing for a long time. What do you think?
Well, you need to, or we can't avoid it.
That it's going to happen, whether we need to or not. I should say.
I think that's right. I think that's right. It's going to take. What's happened is that demand that is driven by economic growth in other countries as well as the U.S. has spurted way ahead, and we've done very little worldwide, and especially in the United States, to increase supply.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly you have a major imbalance, and the fact is that it takes years and years and years to really substantially increase supply, whether you're bringing in new sources of oil or building new refineries or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes years. And so unless something happens, then China stumbles or India stumbles or the U.S. stumbles. And remember, we're the biggest user. And we drink 20 million barrels a day. The next biggest one is China at 6.
But that was with a bullet. They're taking a lot more than they ever have before.
Yeah, they are. That's the whole point.
What's taken everybody by surprise.
Right.
I think that's what's
going
on.
And when supply is really tight, you only need a little increase, you know, in the demand to soak up whatever excess capacity there is, and bingo, you got prices. So they'll stay high. And
Bill, I got 20 seconds. What do you think about the economy the rest of the year?
Economy looks good. There's really nothing that's going to stand in the way, unless consumers finally decide to start saving some money. Right now, the savings rate is zero. Collectively, we spend every dollar we get after taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's because our houses are appreciating, so we feel like we're saving, but we're really not.
Right. Especially if Mr. Greenspan bursts the bubble. Hey, Bill, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see you next time. Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, ladies and gentlemen, chief economist for the NFIB. He'll be back next month, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.